Keith Richards was vacationing on the tropical island of Fiji when he was rushed to hospital with a concussion. I don't know how you could tell he had concussion, but he was rushed to hospital. He was rushed to concussion? Really? All right, then. No, apparently... apparently he fell out of a palm tree. This is true. Keith Richards fell out of a... What the hell is Keith Richards doing in a palm tree? How did he get up there? I have a theory about this. I think what happened is he took so many drugs, he's reached a new level of high, he simply floated off the beach. He was like, too much. And the tree caught him.
That is Craig Ferguson on his Late Late Show last night on CBS. We've been only trying to get him on this show for about a year now, and it took him a year to write a book just so he could be on this show. His new novel is called Between the Bridge and the River. I'm happy to welcome Craig Ferguson to the Paul Harris Show this afternoon.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I'm a big fan, and I really love what you've done. And before we talk about your book, which, by the way, you should stop eating so much spicy food.
Before going to sleep at night.
Or before writing or something
like that. Yeah.
But before we talk about that, I have to talk to you about the monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you first started doing the show, you came out as suit and tie guy, like every other late night show guy, and you were doing joke, and you know, we got 13
and it suck.
Yeah, we got 13 other guys who do it better than you, is what I was gonna say. And
so at what
point did you change that, and in what role did Peter LaSalle have in that change?
Well, it started really the night Johnny Carson died was really the beginning of it. What happened was that the night Johnny Carson died on a Sunday morning, Saturday night actually. So on Monday, I came into work, and you know, Johnny basically was the man who invented the kind of show that we do now, and in many ways, and certainly was, you know, a giant of the genre. So there was no way I could go out and do a bunch of jokes that night. So I talked to Peter LaSalle, who was, you know, one of the producers of The Tonight Show for 30 years and a close friend of Johnny's. And I said, what will I do? And he said, you just got to speak from your heart. And so we decided a couple of things that I would mention. I didn't know Johnny Carson, but I had seen him on TV like other people. So I talked about what I knew about Johnny, and that seemed to work. And so after that, we went back to doing the gag things, but every night, you know, I would say one gag, and then I would, you know, comment on whether I liked the gag or didn't like the gag or what it made me think about. And eventually, after about 2 months of doing the show, 2 or 3 months, I said to Peter, I'm not doing any jokes anymore. And he said, I was wondering how long it was going to take you. And that was basically it.
And so now it's just you coming out. You obviously sit down in the afternoon and talk about it with other people who
We figure out, I've got some bullet points of areas I'm going to cover, and then we go out and we wing it. It's a high wire act.
And it works very, very well.
Thank you.
And congratulations. The only person who does anything even similar to what you do is Regis Philbin, and I think there's a little bit of that in you as well.
Well, thank you, and I think that is a great compliment. Regis is just an extraordinary broadcaster. I think he's amazing at what Regis does. And I remember when I started out, before I started this job, I was interviewed by Regis on a show, and I watched him, and I thought, I need to do what that guy does. And I asked Regis, you know, I said, how do you do that? And he said, panic and no writers. That's how you do it.
Yeah. Regis never had the budget that anybody ever had.
He never had the budget to have any writers. That's right.
Yeah. And so congratulations on the success. It's terrific. And I think the most watchable of the late night shows now, and I know your boss won't like me saying that, Mr. Letterman, but there, I've said it, and if he wants to come on the show and defend himself, he can.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. So is this your first book?
This is the first one I've written. I've read a couple, but this is the first one I've actually, you know, written all the way through.
Well, now that I've read yours, I've read a couple, too.
Yeah, right.
And it is the first book I have ever read that has both Tony Randall and a Watusi warrior in it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of them. It's a difficult genre to get into in the bookshop, but I figured that if you corner a niche market, that's always my plan.
And have you ever met either of those?
No, I never have. I just, this is a work of, well, it's a strange kind of thing. I'm claiming it's a novel, but there's a lot of it is true. So it's like James Frey's book, you know, A Million Little Pieces, but in reverse. But 6 months from now, people will go, hey, you said this was a pack of lies, and apparently a lot of it is true. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, yours is a memoir that you're claiming is fiction.
That's right.
As opposed to his.
That's exactly right.
And by the way, it's not just about Tony Randall and a Watusi warrior. It also includes a scandal-plagued evangelist, a six-time widow, and half-brothers whose fathers are Frank Sinatra and Peter Lawford.
Yeah, that's it. You got it in a nutshell. That's all of the people who are in it.
Now, how many of those people have you actually met?
Well, they're combinations of people that I know that, you know, you turn into other people in your mind. You know, it's just the way it works.
Have you been working on this for a long time?
I started it. Actually, you know, somebody asked me this the other day. I realized that I wrote the first line of this book in 2003. On the way back from the Cannes Film Festival. I had been there with a film that I had directed, and I didn't like the way it had turned out. There was a lot of interference from the studio, and so what I did was I thought the next time I want to write something, I'm going to do it in a way where I don't have to take anyone's permit. You know, don't have to get anyone's permission. I don't have to talk to any actors or studio executives or anyone else. And so what I did was I wrote it in a novel form because that's the only way where you can do it all on your own.
Mm-hmm. And when you're writing a novel, you can make up all sorts of stuff, including character names, which I would always think would be the hardest part about it. You know you want to have this woman doing it, but how does she become Claudette Bruchard? Or how do the Pinkertons become the Pinkertons?
You know, it's funny. I guess that is not, for me, that was not the hardest part of doing it. I spend a little bit of time on a name and then move on. If it's not right, you go back and change it later. The interesting thing is that when your book is being checked, because they have to check it by lawyers, you sometimes, you know, to make sure there's no actionable anything you've said.
Even in a novel?
Even in a novel, yeah. If you claim things, I mean, lawyers look through everything because the publishers want to, you know, make sure that they're not liable for anything you've said. And, you know, if there's somebody has exactly the same name, then you have to change it.
So
if, you know, it's okay if, like, a lot of people have the same name, then it's all right, because it could be any one of them.
Uh-huh.
But if it's only, if there's, like, one person in America with the name Claudette Bruchard, then you can't have it.
So there's somebody, actually, who goes on Google and Googles...
Oh, people are Googling themselves all the time. It's America's guilty epidemic.
But as you said last night, carefully.
Carefully. Google yourself carefully.
Yeah.
And with love, tenderly.
Now that you're doing a publicity tour for the book... And you host a show where people come on their publicity tours.
Yeah.
Do you have more sympathy for the guest or more disregard for them?
Well, I always have some sympathy for the guest because I had done this kind of thing before.
Yeah.
So I kind of you know, I feel sympathy for them. What I do, though, is on the tour, as a guest on other people's show, I have sympathy for the host. That's for sure. You know, you go on there and you think, I got to help this man or woman, you know, get through the next 6 or 8 minutes of their life because I know what it's like to deal with someone who doesn't want to help.
Yeah.
Or is shy, which is more often than anything else. People get a little kind of frightened when they go out there, so you have to help them out a little bit.
Right.
Because I don't script the interviews. I mean, a lot of the guys, you know, they do I'm going to ask you this, then you can say that. I don't do that, so... You know, what you get is what you get.
And there's no pre-interview on your show.
There's a pre-interview in the sense that, you know, one of my guys will call them and ask them, you know, where they've been, what they're doing, where they're from, how tall are they, you know, that kind of thing.
But yeah.
There's no, he's going to ask you this type stuff. That doesn't happen.
I have guests who've done my show many, many times who refuse to tell me ahead of time what they want to talk about because they know I will purposely not ask them about those things.
God bless you, young man. That's the way it should be done.
I'm sure you do that with some people who you have on the show. Like, you know, you have, I'm sorry, what is John Ritter's widow's name? Amy
Yazbeck?
Yes. It's obvious that you two are close, and when she comes on, it's just playtime, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Exactly right. We just, you know, yickety-yak-yak.
Speaking of women, which gets you more women, a TV show or a novel?
I it's too early to tell.
Yeah, it would have to be best-selling novelist.
Well, it's on the best-seller list now. It made the LA Times best-seller list this weekend.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
My favorite line in the book, Hugh Grant is upper class, which means everybody already knew he was sexually deviant.
Yes.
Now explain that for my audience.
Well, Hugh Grant is upper class.
Yes.
Which means that everybody knows he's sexually deviant.
Don't repeat it. Explain it.
Well, I always thought that the upper class, the English upper classes, were so bored they just started, fooling around with anything.
Yeah.
And they are a bit like that. I've met a bunch of them. They're all crazy and inbred. They're like hillbillies with money. really, these country homes are just double wides with gargoyles. That's all it is.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you go because I know you got to get ready for your show tonight.
Our show tonight, yeah.
But before you go, I just want to tell you the show you did the day after your dad died.
Oh, thank you.
Was just, I think, a landmark in American late-night television because you handled it with such aplomb on the air, and it was obvious that your passion for your dad was there, and it was really, really classy television, and to make that entertaining at the same time is a very difficult thing to do, I know, so kudos to you.
Thank you very much. Very kind of you, Sam.
Thank you. I hope we can talk again sometime.
That would be nice, Paul.
Craig Ferguson, The Late Late Show, is on at midnight on Channel 4 here in St. Louis. And the book, the bestseller, is called Between the Bridge and the River. Craig Ferguson on The Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.